Welcome to another edition of the 51%, Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. What is transcendental meditation? According to the literature, it's a simple, effortless, easy-to-learn technique that will improve all areas of one's life. The actual practice consists of sitting comfortably in a chair with eyes closed for 15 to 20 minutes twice a day. During that time, the active thinking mind moves into a state of pure consciousness, becoming quiet but alert, allowing the body to achieve a profound state of rest and relaxation. Research has found the practice of TM improves creativity, increases intelligence, promotes health and longevity, and more than 6 million people have learned the technique. One of those 6 million is my guest today. Janet Hoffman learned the TM technique back in 1968. She subsequently became a teacher and for 30 years directed and taught at the New York City TM Centers. Since 2012, Janet has served as a national board member for the Transcendental Meditation Program for Women and is the executive director of the TM Program for Women Professionals. She also writes articles and blogs on consciousness and its relevance to women's emotional, mental, and physical health. Janet, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm pleased to be here.
So, what attracted and prompted you to first get involved with transcendental meditation?
I had a friend who learned it before I did, and she recommended it to me. And I put it off for a while, a little suspicious. What is it? I don't know what I'll be doing here.
And I don't need it.
I didn't know if I needed it or not. It was just that I didn't know what it was. It was too new for me, especially back in 68. I hadn't heard a lot about it. But eventually, I was convinced by seeing her benefits that I should check it out. She just seemed far more collected and focused and clear. And so I learned the technique, and when I did it, I was basically just amazed because in just a couple of minutes, I settled down so deeply, and the relief was palpable, you know, that the tangible deep rest that I experienced was amazing. And I right then and there realized that I felt as if everything was going to be okay, as if something inside me that had been tight had been released, probably some deep stress. And I knew right then and there that I wanted to become a teacher of this. But I was a late teenage years. I was about 19 at the time. Oops, now I've given my age away.
Someone will do the math.
Uh-oh. And so I'll move right on now so nobody has time. And it occurred to me that, you know, I needed to do more with my education and so on first. But I kept that focus. And as fast as I could, as soon as I could, I did go off and take a teacher training course in the TM technique.
But this friend who turned you on to this, did she have a high level of stress in her life?
Well, it's true that a lot of people do start the TM technique because of stress, anxiety, depression, bad health. People are referred to learn it by physicians, by psychiatrists, by psychologists, etc. But in her case, no. I mean, she was, and you'll be surprised how many students fall into this category. She was just a student with a lot of miscellaneous, confused chaos in her mind. What did she want?
A college student, you mean?
Yeah, okay. She was a college student. And she just wasn't clear on what to do with herself. And I think most people at that age are not terribly clear. She knew that there was something more. That was another thing, that intuition that there's something deeper inside, something that lies beyond what we can study in this physical world with all the different disciplines you can study in schools or that you can then, you know, major in and then work in specialties. She just knew that there was something more than that. And so the combination of wanting to get herself more together and to look within, after all, it was the 60s, and someone told her about the TM technique, and that's why she went for it. And then I think at that time, most people who learned because someone they trusted and knew how to do it had told them to try it out as well. So I learned it because she encouraged me. But these days, because, as you may know, there have been over 360 peer-reviewed published research studies on the benefits of TM, from reduced heart disease to increased grade point average. People are now very often learning because they've seen the scientific validation. And all the celebrities learning and talking about it, you know, people want to have what they have.
Go back in time and give us some history about how this technique began with the Maharishi.
Actually, the technique and the principles that underlie the technique are pretty ancient, just in the same way that gravity is not something new or that wasn't developed by the Brits or whatever. It was something that what Newton, as the story goes, sitting under a tree, an apple falls on his head and he goes, ooh. And so, you know, gravity is based, it's a law of nature. And if you know how to take advantage of it, you can use pulley systems and all sorts of things, you know, that are part of modern technology. So the principles that are operating in the person's brain, in their mind, in their consciousness, even in their physiology, are nothing new. But it was an ancient tradition, actually, called the Vedic tradition. Ved is a word that means total knowledge. And that tradition, over many, many hundreds and thousands of years, brought out this knowledge in by implementing how a person could take advantage of this internal field of infinite intelligence, energy, and creativity that's called consciousness within the mind, how to tap into that so that we could then experience the benefits of it in everyday life. And Maharishi was part of that tradition, the Vedic tradition. Maharishi Mahesh Yogi was a recluse in India. He had been a student in India, physics student. And then he heard about Swami Brahmananda Saraswati, who is a Jagat Guru of Jyotirmath. He is like sort of the head of his religion in India. And Maharishi had heard about him and went to see him and immediately, just within himself, cognized, recognized, understood that this man was a master of the laws of nature. And he wanted to be around that. He wanted that knowledge. He already had a knowledge of physical world, mm-hmm. physics, but he wanted something that transcended that, something that brought everything that exists in physical reality into reality, the unmanifest field, like what unified field physicists would call the unified field of all the laws of nature. And that underlying field, which gives rise to everything in creation from the microcosm to the macrocosm, he wanted to have that as well as the external knowledge. And when he met this man, he wanted to be his disciple, his student. And he was told to first go and finish school. Uh-huh. And then he went back and he was with his master for many years until his master passed on. And then Maharishi, as a naturally a recluse, not a householder, went to live in the Himalayas in a place called Uttarkashi. And after some period of time, he kept having this thought to come out to visit a temple in the south of India. Now, he was a recluse, a monk, and he's wearing just, you know, the minimal thing that they wear, those robes, those dhotis. And yet this kept coming to him, and he thought, well, there's nowhere to go anywhere. You already have infinity within you. But he kept feeling compelled to make this trip, so finally he went with it. Nature was giving him that impulse, and he went. And when he was in the south of India, people kept approaching him. You are an enlightened sage. They saw him as such. And they said, can you speak? And he said, can I speak? Yes. Do I lecture? No. Because he was a recluse. He didn't want to come out and teach, and which is ironic given what happened. Anyway, they kept beseeching him. And finally, he did. He came out and he gave a series of talks. Now, at that time in India, the knowledge of how to transcend, how to settle down, was mired with ignorance. People thought that in order to have this experience of silence within, you had to stop desiring. You had to renounce your desires. You had to self-flagellate. You had to fast. You had to, et cetera, et cetera.
Like being an ascetic almost.
You had to be an ascetic. And you see many of them still in India. And they mm-hmm. thought, oh, that's the way to get to this. You have to cut off the external perception in order to have the internal. But Maharishi showed them how it all exists at once. There's that within the silence and the ground state of creation within all the active states. And all that's a matter of is switching your perception from an outer level to an inner, like a pendulum back and forth, and that you didn't have to renunciate. You could have a householder. So this was for them quite a revival of pure knowledge that had been lost for hundreds of years, centuries. And so thousands of people started flocking to him. And eventually they asked, come to Europe, come to America. By the time he got to the United States, he recognized that he could not begin to teach as many people as wanted to learn, and he had to multiply himself mm-hmm. by creating teachers. And those teachers, in turn, opened TM centers throughout the world. Eventually, he also inaugurated what I work with now, which is the Transcendental Meditation Program for Women, because he felt women should teach women. We understand each other on a certain level, sometimes more comfortable with each other. And that's how the whole thing unfolded. And there are now about 20,000 TM teachers throughout the world.
So he popularized this technique and this practice.
What popularized it were two things. First of all, it worked. And people were hungry for something like that. And it wasn't actually this, even by the 60s, it wasn't so much the youth at first. It was adults who learned the TM technique. But then the students got into it, and they wildly popularized it and publicized
and embraced it.
Yes, mm-hmm. And that's when the scientific research started, because Maharishi had the genius to know that he should expose this to, in the scientific age, to scientists and let them do research on the reduction in metabolic rate and the increase of brain coherence and the benefits to personality and behavior and relationships and so on. And the research started coming out and being published, and that really helped popularize it. And also, funnily enough, of course, the Beatles. Everyone associates
right.
the Beatles with TM, TM with the Beatles. They all learned, and I actually had quite a talk with George Harrison about it, and he told me how they all got into it, but that's a different radio interview. And it was funny because Maharishi said every time they mentioned TM, they would say transcendental meditation, the technique used by the Beatles. And he said, oh, we're making them famous.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Janet Hoffman. She is the executive director of the Transcendental Meditation Program for Women Professionals. So what does that mean? How did you get involved with this? What do you do? Explain all of it to me.
Okay. All right. So first of all, I'm going to throw out a few statistics here that might be actually surprising to some of your listeners. According to the Center for Mental Health Services of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 1 in 3 visits to a physician's office by women in the U.S. result in a prescription for antidepressant medication. 1 in 3
wow.
doctor's visits.
Wow.
Okay? Brain structure and functioning are different in a woman than a man. One thing that we all know, of course, women tend to have a lot of activity in the brain, in all parts of the brain, a little bit different than men. 79% of the U.S. population with symptoms of anxiety are women. Hmm. That's 79%. 6 out of 10 of us have insomnia. Women produce 52% less serotonin, you know, the chocolate hormone, as they call it, which is crucial to promoting sleep.
Mm-hmm.
52% less for women. Women, as I'm sure your listeners know, make up more than half of the workforce.
Oh, yes, we do.
We talk about that. Though we only hold 13% of executive positions in the U.S.
Right.
Plus, most often, we also carry the bulk of housework and childcare. Another interesting thing is that hypertension, since about the 70s, has become a prominent women's issue, and especially as we age. It can become more prominent. By the time we're 60, half of the women our age will have hypertension. And by the time we're 75, 60%. Harvard Women's Health Watch reports that hypertension is the most common condition for which women seek medical attention. A last one, cardiovascular disease, number one cause of mortality in women. And it's quite often different in women than in men. Different because the arteries, the structure of the heart is different. Women who've had a heart attack are more likely to not recover, whereas men are more likely than women to recover. Risk factors for TM, such as depression, insomnia, chronic stress, smoking, all of these things, which can be reduced by transcendental meditation, by the way, a lot of these things are caused by inflammation, which women are more likely to get for various reasons. I'm not a medical professional, but I've read all the literature. We have a website, by the way, called TM for Women's Heart Health. TMFOR, Women's Heart Health, no apostrophe, .org. And it has a lot of this information for those who are interested. And everyone should be interested because we don't actually just get heart disease. Heart disease starts developing many years before with bad habits, bad eating habits, or, you know, smoking or whatever it may be. So with these gender disparities, we found that women are interested in dealing with their issues. Men do not address them. Even in the area of heart disease, for example, it was usually considered a man's disease. And mostly it was studied by the medical profession, by researchers, for the sake of the way that men function. And only in these last few years is it coming out, and it's becoming very well known, that women have to be treated differently. They have to be diagnosed differently. Their surgery and things like that, everything is slightly different with women than with men.
Mm-hmm.
So teaching the transcendental meditation technique, for example, has a significant effect on decreasing depression. In a study published in the Journal of Counseling and Development, patients suffering from post-traumatic stress problems who learned TM showed significant reduction in depression after just 4 months. And that was in contrast to people who were in traditional psychotherapy who did not show this benefit at all.
Obviously, listening to you, you'd have to be an idiot if you're a woman not to get involved with transcendental meditation. But my point is, are women being taught this technique differently than men are being taught the technique?
There are some individual differences when we're teaching someone, which is why part of TM instruction must be in private. You need the teacher's attention all to yourself one-on-one for the first day of a four-part course of instruction. It has to be one-on-one. It's not a gender different thing. It's just an individually different thing. But we teach women by women, and in our lectures, talking to women can deal with their issues and their questions in a way that men just don't have it in them to do.
Right, or just don't get.
Yeah, so our websites, the women's websites, are one doorway into a theater where people can learn TM, let's say, whereas there are also websites for everyone, for men and women, or just for men, or for educators, or for business people like that. But we've specifically wrote, and I wrote one of them, you know, we have all these brochures for nurses, let's say. Nurses, 97%, 96% are women. And nurses have terrible burnout. And who understands that better than other nurses who are women?
Right.
And so we have a department in our organization for reaching out to nurses and teaching them. And so we have specific writing and lectures and ways of explaining it to them that will ring a bell for them, that will be true to their nature.
So when did the organization start to focus on women? Is it a relatively new phenomenon, what you're doing?
Yes.
And you also call it women professionals as opposed to women.
Oh, no. Well, we have—
You do both?
Yes. We have the program for women is our national program, and within that is our program for women professionals.
So tell me what you do in that role.
I do what you said when you introduced me. I write down a lot of what we need to say because I have interviewed women in all walks of life who are professionals, from nurses to women on Wall Street and so on. And I've asked them, who've learned the TM technique, I've asked them, what is it that you treasure most about what TM has done for you? And based on that, I've been able to write down and express, especially in terms of the scientific validation of TM, I've been able to express what women professionals are looking for so that when they read this, they go, yes, yes, I need
this. It's speaking to me.
Exactly.
So what do they need?
All of us, we need more energy. We need less agitation. We need more coherence in our thinking. We need a good ground state of warmth in our feeling. Nobody wants to scream at their children just because they've worked all day and they come home and they're tired. They want to be able to recoup when they get home. They want to be able to do something, and TM takes 20 minutes, as you said, twice a day to do, where by the end of it, you have reduced the stress in your physiology. You've increased the coherence in your brain functioning. You've changed the consistency of your blood chemistry. All of the things that are indicative of stress and narrow vision are reduced while you're meditating. And so when you end your meditation, your body's relaxed, your brain is more coherent, your speech is more harmonious. You turn to your children and you've got the whole evening to give them or your spouse or just to sit down on a sofa and enjoy a movie on TV. You recoup with the TM technique.
I'll play the devil's advocate. That can't happen to a woman if she takes a 20-minute nap?
No, it actually can't. And that's a wonderful question, really, because people will ask us, what's the difference between TM and just resting? First of all, when you're resting, your metabolic rate drops. That's a good thing. At the deepest point of sleep in the night, the metabolic rate may be down as much as 10 or 12%, meaning your body is resting that deeply. When you do transcendental meditation, your metabolic rate can drop twice as much as that, even after 3 or 4 minutes of sitting and doing it. So you're getting a much more profound rest. And what happens when you rest? Deeply rooted fatigue and stress can be dissolved. So that when you open your eyes, you are not just mentally refreshed, you are physically refreshed. You feel significant, tangible energy and mind-body coordination and rested as if you just had a little mini vacation. And so that's one thing. It's different because of that. The other is taking a nap does not increase the brain coherence, whereas TM does. TM creates changes in the brain functioning that nothing, not hypnosis, not other meditations, no relaxation techniques, no sleep, change. The researchers early on at Stanford Research Institute said TM created what was called they called it a wakeful hypometabolic state. Wakeful hypometabolic state means, as you described earlier when you were talking about TM, is that the mind is awake, in fact, fully awake. It's like falling awake when you do TM as opposed to falling asleep. The mind becomes increasingly awake inside and yet at the same time not hectic or agitated, but increasingly settled and silent. So the mind is awake to itself. That's consciousness. And consciousness again, a synonym for the unified field of all the laws of nature. It's the most subtle foundation of all the dynamism of the universe. It's the infinite field of intelligence, energy, and creativity that's within everything. And yet a human being can find that within their own mind by transcending levels of thought. So rather than, let's say, using a microscope and looking at the microscopic, atomic, whatever levels with some scope, you're actually experiencing subtler and subtler levels of thought and even transcending to experience within the mind that field of awareness, which is the source of thought. And being the source of thought and of everything, it has to have infinite intelligence, energy, and creativity. So imagine when the mind dips into that, and after 20 minutes of settling into that and coming out and settling and coming out, you get up, your body has thrown off a lot of stress, the mind has become more, it's absorbed more of its own inner capacity. Psychologists say that people use maybe 10-15% of the mind, so we're starting to expand on that. We're starting to enliven more of that.
Can you explain exactly what happens? If I'm sitting and I'm meditating, what is it that I'm supposed to be doing? How do you make that transition to transcendental meditation? Well, and why is this better than any other form of meditation?
The beautiful thing is you don't have to make a transition. The technique does it for you. It's like saying, how do I make myself fall down? Well, gravity's already there. You just have to get the right angle. Many people think that meditation, when they come to learn, they think that meditation means you must stop your thinking process. And that's a shame. That is what's given rise to so many techniques in the name of concentration, which I will tell you do not work and which increase anxiety. Transcendental meditation does not involve either contemplation, which means thinking about something on the level of its meaning. You know, I am one with nature, or my mind is getting quiet, and it does not involve concentration. It's a kind of a trigger mechanism. You start the technique. It's like getting to the edge of a cliff, and then you just tip over and gravity takes you down. So you start the technique. And the idea that you should not have thought during it is ridiculous. As long as the mind is awake, it's capable of thinking and will probably have thoughts. But during TM, as the coherence in the brain increases, we're experiencing that thought at subtler levels. In the same way that I can yell hello, I can also say hello, hello, hello. So inherent within the mind's ability to think as it normally does, concrete thought, during TM it can still have thoughts, but they're at subtler, quieter levels. So this idea that the mind must be silent and no other, it's erroneous. We have increased coherence and unfoldment of mental capacity and this deep rest in the body and all the benefits that meditation should give without there being any kind of strain. So all of those understandings about meditation are antiquated with TM. It's effortless, and it works, and it's significant. And that's, again, why there have been 360 peer-reviewed published studies conducted at independent research institutes from Harvard to UCLA, measuring the benefits of it.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Janet Hoffman, who is the executive director of the Transcendental Meditation Program for Women Professionals. So after the 20 minutes or the 15 or 20 minutes, then the change in one is noticeable.
Yes, significantly noticeable. There's, first of all, that reduction of anxiety, which is hormonal. I mean, you can measure it in the blood while the person is doing TM and after. And you can measure muscle relaxation. There are so many research studies, and I do encourage people to go to the website and look at the page on scientific research.
Which
so
is
they
TM?
TMWomenProfessionals.org or TM-Women.org. And I recommend that, you know, men can look into it as well, of course, but my focus right now is women and girls. TM has been taught to hundreds of thousands of school students in schools. A school in San Francisco, which was, they were giving one more year before they were closing it, was completely turned around. The violence was reduced. The grade point average
went
up.
Isn't that great?
Yep.
How can you draw people in?
Basically, they just need to hear about it. And if they have the clarity of mind and the curiosity to look into it, they
give us...
But
that's an individual. I mean, something like a program for young girls. What's your going out process?
It's usually the responsible people involved, like a school principal or a nurse. Or it could be somebody who runs a business. For example, there's a very famous company in Connecticut that has made TM available to all its employees. and things like that. So we'll have someone who's responsible, will hear about the TM, learn the TM technique themselves, and they'll say, oh, I want my children to do it. I want my students to do it. I want my faculty to do it.
You're never too young and you're never too old?
Never too young or old. You just have to have the ability to think a thought and follow some pretty simple instructions. We teach 10-year-old kids who have significant symptoms of ADD or ADHD, the TM technique, and see a significant difference in their focus, their clarity, their sense of well-being, and all of this is documented.
And you would think that that would be part of a curriculum.
You would think.
But it's not.
Not in the United States yet. In some schools, yes, as I said. You know, they did introduce it, for example, in several schools now in San Francisco and throughout the world. But it's not something that we have where I live in New York City yet.
So we kind of glossed over that a little bit. You learn the technique and you decide that you want to become a teacher. What was that process like? Did you ever entertain the idea that this is what you would do with your life?
Not before I had learned it, but the day I learned it, I immediately
turned
knew,
you
as
around.
I mentioned, yes. And it was a big surprise to me. It was a big surprise to my family. I had been sort of going in a scientific direction. I had gone to Bronx High School of Science in New York, and somehow that put me in the direction of, oh, I'm going to be a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interested, as I still am, in the subtler mechanics of nature. By the time I heard about the TM technique, the instant, as I said, the day I learned it, I knew I wanted to become a teacher of it. There's nothing more profound than the mechanics of the laws of nature that are functioning within the mind and within the universe and how they relate to each other. And that took answer to all my personal desires of wanting to be deep in the field of science, but also wanting to evolve. I had a very strong connection, I guess you could call it spiritual connection, though not at all religious connection, to life. I wanted to know what was deeper. And the TM technique opened all of that up for me.
Wow. And so you've taught everywhere, haven't you?
I did actually give some lectures in Russia once when I was visiting. And I've instructed in, let's see, I assisted Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, the founder of the TM program, in teaching teacher training courses for teachers. When someone wants to become a TM teacher, you go away for quite a course of study.
I was just going to ask, how long is that process?
Right now, it's about 6 months in residence.
And where might you be in residence?
We have a university in Iowa, Maharishi University of Management, which is fully accredited through the PhD program. And everyone on campus does the TM technique, as do the professors and the gardeners and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fascinating school because they have the basis of what they're studying in their own consciousness. It's that may be a whole other talk to give, but it's...
How long has that school been in existence?
I think since the 70s.
Oh, okay.
I have to remember.
Mm-hmm.
And they get all sorts of awards, even for sports and things like that, not just for science or math and so on. And so our teacher training courses are held there right near the Maharishi University of Management campus.
Mm-hmm.
And we have courses for women to become teachers and courses for men to become teachers. And now people basically mostly teach their own gender, where people seem to be
and
more comfortable.
And there are TM centers around the country. And if one went to the website, if you live in Michigan versus Florida or whatever, you can always make a match for yourself.
Yeah, go to tm-women.org or tmwomenprofessionals.org or tmforwomensheartheath.org. You know, one of these sites, and they all have a contact page. Just fill it out or make the phone call. Yeah.
So this just, for you, the smartest thing you ever did?
Oh, yes. And since I learned, everyone in my family and all my friends have learned. My father is now 97. He's been doing TM since the early 70s.
Crazy. Because of you.
Well, he learned because of me, but he kept it up because of the experience and the benefits.
Well, you were the catalyst. You were the spark.
Yes. I was the one who dragged him in, kicking. And then everyone, all the way through one of my sisters went to Maharishi University of Management in Iowa. My other sister was a biochemist, very scientifically oriented, but she looked at the scientific research on TM and said, this is for me. She never would have believed it just for me.
Mm-hmm.
She looked at the research. She learned it. She had her children learn it as they were growing up. One of them has children, and one of her children has already learned it. And so on.
Look at what you've spawned.
I know. I'm dangerous.
It's terrific. Jetta, thanks so much for coming here today. It was fascinating. And listening to you, one has to be nuts not to practice transcendental meditation.
I would agree with that. And thank you so much for having me.
It has been my pleasure. Join us for another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.
Thanks for listening to The 51%, Conversations with Creative Women. For show comments and suggestions, please follow us on Twitter at Sandy Klein Show. You can also find us on Facebook at The 51% Conversations. The show is produced and recorded by Chad Dugatz at the Hangar Studios in New York City. Sandy Klein is our executive producer.